Hey, you're listening to the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo and Ariana Pardo, episode 116.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So this one's going to be an interesting intro only because I'm recording this right now. It's Friday afternoon. It's about 2:32 and my wife just hit the road. She's out shopping. And so I have Princess Ariana on my lap, my two-year-old daughter, and I have my two-month-old in a rocker next to me. And I said, you want to know what? Screw it. I'm going to record the intro. Maybe she'll hop on and introduce herself. And so if you hear some babies in the background, now you know what's going on here. So anyway, guys, I just want to kind of give you a preview of this episode and this masterclass on what's to come. It's one of my favorites that I've done so far. I'm interviewing a guy by the name of Dale Hensel. Now, if you haven't heard of Dale, he's not like a guru or much of a public speaker or anything like that, right? But what the guy is a stud, just an absolute. You see, and there goes her water bottle flying. But what Dale is a serial entrepreneur. I mean, the guy has done anything and everything you could possibly imagine. And we talk in this episode about a lot of the successes, and we also talk about some of the failures. But when Dale was 21, he started off actually as a commercial fisherman out in Alaska. And from there, he went on to be a repo man. And he just had this belief. And that's one of the things that you're going to hear in this particular episode about how there wasn't anything he couldn't do, because he just had that mindset. And so in 1996, he bought his first apartment complex, a 15-unit building. Then he went on to buy a 16-unit building, then a 44-unit complex. And you're even going to hear some of the things that we cover on this particular episode is how he bought a 16,000-square-foot Class A office building for 21 cents on the dollar. He bought it out of bankruptcy and instantly appraised for over $4 million. He talked about a flip he did on another huge commercial project. But more than that, we talk about just mindset and what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur. I mean, he's somebody who he started an internet company and he grew it from zero to 25 million in under 3 years. And it's just fascinating guy, just somebody that I highly encourage you get to know. Without really wasting any more time or diving into it, before I bring him on here, Ariana, do you have anything to say? Say hi. Hi. So guys, I hope you enjoy this episode and comment on the show notes page. Let me know. And hopefully you get a lot of value out of this podcast episode with my man, Dale Hensel. What's up, my friends? Welcome to another Flip Empire Show. I appreciate you hopping on here. And if you're joining us for the first time, really want to take the time to thank you for hopping on and trying to advance yourself. And hopefully my goal here is always to deliver value and bring you the cream of the crop entrepreneurs and investors. And, you know, selfishly, I'm super grateful that I have the opportunity to host this podcast, because in these masterclass, it gives me the opportunity to network and connect with just a lot of high level individuals. And before I bring today's guest on, you just heard the intro of Dale, and Dale's somebody that I got to know about 5-6 years ago at an internet marketing conference. And from the moment I met him, he was somebody that he just kind of has like a magnetic personality, and you'll see when I bring him on here, not to put any pressure on him, but the guy's just, you know, he attracts so many people to him, and he has such a diverse background. One of the things that I don't even know if Dale knows this, but when I first met him, we were in a group of other entrepreneurs. We were having lunch, and he mentioned something about always just having a belief in himself that he could do anything. And that's something that always stuck with me. And again, I don't think I've ever, introduced someone with such a diverse background, from being a commercial fisherman in Alaska to repo man, private money syndicator, you know, bought and sold companies, taking companies public. And so while today's episode is not going to be centered or focused around wholesaling, I want you to kind of put that aside for now and open your mind up to other potential possibilities and really just try to gain insight into somebody that operates at a very, very high level and somebody that's been there and done that. So, Dale, man, having said that, it's awesome to get you on, man.
Well, thank you. I'm going to have a lot to live up to after an intro like that. You bet.
Well, man, nothing to live up to, man. I'm just grateful to reconnect with you and get you back on. So, Dale, just so you know, man, I know we spoke about, you know, the show prior, but the audience here is primarily made up of wholesalers and real estate investors in general, fix and flip. And so, you know, there's so many directions. One of the challenges for me as the host, you know, when I knew that we were going to have you on is, you know, in 30 to 45 minutes, what should we focus on? Because you can talk about so many things from raising private money to any type of real estate transaction you can think of. Or, you know, we could just talk about being an entrepreneur in general, because, you know, in my eyes, you're like the definition of a serial entrepreneur. So, man, I guess aside from what I covered in the intro, maybe if you can kind of just give us a high level overview of who you are and, you know, especially for the people that may not have heard of you.
All right, sure. So I usually start with, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I spent a lot of time traveling around, and then I went up to Alaska and I became a commercial fisherman up there, commercial diver. And I was up there for about 5 years, absolutely loved it, had so much fun. It was just a blast. The commercial diver, commercial fishing was just, it was great being out there on the ocean and away from everything. But when I came back from Alaska, I went back and I started being a repo man in Idaho. And that was a really interesting job because I learned a little bit about how to collect money from people and everything else, which led me to really a lot of my other successes. I was able to ask for people to give me money or give me their stuff back. But, you know, from there, really quickly, I just, you know, I bought like 250 apartments in like 2.5 years. I went to Dallas and bought a 400-unit apartment complex with a couple other people. I learned about the note business and non-performing loan business, so I started buying non-performing loans direct from banks. Took a company public, had a $75 million line of credit, raised a little over $90 million. And, you know, at our peak, we were buying like 300 houses a week all over the country for an average of about 25 cents on the dollar. Yeah. And that was from 2002 to 2007. In 2002, I kind of knew the banks were were doing the same stupid things that they've done before, and so they were going to crash. And so I built a company predicated on a bank crash, and in 2007, I sold my position to a fund. In 2008, my daughter was born, and so I took a few years off. Nice. I did do some coaching for a couple high-level executives, some C-level guys. I coached a couple of CEOs. And then, you know, when my daughter got old enough to go to school, I lost my play buddy, so I started another business, an online business, actually, with a couple guys, and we grew that. We grew that to like $25 million a year, selling products online. We sold a little over $85 million worth of products in the last 5 years. We ended up branching off into other businesses as well, from some real estate, commercial, some hospice, some assisted living facilities, restaurants, event planning, things like that. And then eventually, you know, and now I'm kind of like selling my part out of that. It's, you know, I have about a 5-year time frame, and then I got to go do something else. So I'm now working on my next venture, and that one's pretty creative. It's dealing with some what do you call those? The oil field services down in Carlsbad and in southern New Mexico. It's also dealing with, you know, just some internet marketing and some coaching. I'm kind of getting back into coaching, mentoring. I've done a lot of mentoring over the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of like, you know, figuring out what I want to do next with my life. Right. You know, I live these 5-year chunks and then I move on. And so from everything from running companies as the CEO of public companies to, you know, just being a mentor and a down to earth coach, I've done a lot of different things in a lot of different industries. It's not always just been one. I've done a lot of real estate. Don't get me wrong. I love real estate. Real estate's in my blood. But you know, I've also ventured into a lot of other projects. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, man, like I said, you didn't disappoint, and there's so many directions I can go in here. And one of the things that fascinates me is just, you know, every time you and I have a conversation, I don't know if you know this, I always take away and walk away with something. And so for me, one of the things I hope to kind of accomplish here that, you know, people listening in can get as well is I kind of want to, you know, dig into your mind a little bit to see,
sure.
You know, you've been involved in so many businesses. You've been a huge success. Of course, you'll be the first to say that you've also had your failures and you learn, if not as much from the success, you probably learn more from the failures. What has allowed you, like, so I kind of want to just peel back the onion here as far as how you think and how you operate. What has allowed you in your mind, if you had to kind of boil it down to a few major things, what's allowed you to accomplish so much? I mean, you're a young man, you know, you're, you know, in your what, mid to late 40s. How have you been able to accomplish so much in such a short amount of time without getting distracted by, like, you know, the shiny object syndrome? It almost feels like everything you touch kind of turns to gold, you know?
Right. Well, I've had my, you know, share of failures too. You know, in 2008, I lost $20 million. And so, you know, I've had my butt kicked too. And so not everything I've touched turned to gold, but I've done pretty well. I have probably a couple things I can identify that's helped with my successes. I have a lot of flexibility. I have a very high level understanding of how pieces go together and can simplify complex things into, you know, smaller chunk categories, mm-hmm. which I'll explain in a minute. And I have this enduring belief that if somebody else can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And so all I have to do is see or hear that somebody else has done it, and I automatically believe that I can do it. And I go, well, why not? And it's not that I don't get distracted from shiny objects. I do. I totally do. What I have, though, is a secondary strategy where I actually have a pair of pruning shears, and I just go off and clip and cut off all the shiny objects on a regular basis. I go, oh, look at all the cool things. And then I sit down and go, that's out, that's out, that's out. Stop doing this. So really, success is not as much sometimes as doing stuff successfully as much as stop doing things that are really, really distractions and really unsuccessful in getting you what you want. So stop doing things is almost as much of a secret as doing the right things in a big way.
Well, let me interject there for a second, because, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with that. You know, there's a lot of people that they'll bounce from, especially, you know better than I do, especially within the real estate game, people will bounce from wholesaling to fix and flip to subject two to seller financing and short sales. And yet most people are not able to just kind of focus in and master an area, and they bounce around, and yet they don't really accomplish that much. Like, a lot of people don't have that skill that you have. So, you know, you talked about that pruning, like you have that tool in your tool belt. Like, how do you go about deciding what to weed out, what to cut out, and then what to attack?
Okay. So, when I tackle something and I'm going, okay, I'm going to commit to this, I do have because of my experience, I have a longer view of things, and I know that it takes 1 year to get really established, 2 years to get 2 to 3 years to get profitable, and 5 years to be really successful and everything else. So everything I start with, I know that it's just going to take 3 to 5 years. And what I do is I commit to the learning, the grind. I commit to the boring parts. A lot of people go, I can't find enough wholesale deals. And I go, well, okay, that's how long you've been doing it? 2 months? Yeah. It takes a little while to develop. Yeah, it takes a little while to develop the contacts and the consistency of your actions and of your contacts' actions. So here's an example. I had a bird dog come to me and says, I'll bring you deals. I said, okay, cool. And for 3 months, I didn't hear from him. And then he brought me one deal. And then for 3 months, I didn't hear from him. He brought me another deal. And I said, so why aren't you bringing me more deals? Are you giving them to other people? He says, well, I just don't know how to find them. So I said, but you spent 6 months now talking to all these people and telling them all this stuff. He goes, yeah. I said, have you gone back and talked to the same people and said, hey, once a week, you know, go through your whole Rolodex of people who are supposed to bring you deals and just say, hey, have you any deal this week? And he started doing that, and he started getting 7, 8, 10 deals suddenly a month, because all he did, he'd already built out the infrastructure and the context. Right. He never followed up with them. And what it does take is for any business regardless of what business it is you have to build out the contacts, then you have to remind the contacts you're still around, then you have to build some of those relationships, then you have to go back to them and follow up with them. And then suddenly one day you wake up and you're realizing you're doing 10, 20, 30 times what you thought you were doing in the first month. You're doing so much more, but it took 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Now, after 6 months, you've got things rolling. After a year, you've got things more and more refined. And as long as you don't get hooked on the shiny objects, you'll continue to move forward. And eventually, here's what I like to call it. I like to call it inevitable wealth, right? If you consistently do the right actions and stop doing the bad ones, you're going to inevitably be wealthy, because there's a million ways to make $1 million, a million ways.
I love just that.
You just have to pick one, and you just have to be consistent. So whenever I get all these, hey, you know, you can make all this money really fast this way, I go, really cool. And I automatically know it'll take me 6 months to build it out and 6 months to refine it and a year to get it really, a year and a half, 2 years to get it profitable. And I just know that, right? Mm-hmm. So whenever I sit down and I write down all the opportunities that are in front of me, I look at 2 years for each one of those things. Okay. And I go, well, how much time do I want to spend on it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't really want to. All right, I'm already doing this. Now, once you have a business up and running, right? Everybody goes, multiple streams of income and diversification. I go, stop doing that. Stop. That's just like the worst thing you can do. So what you need to do is you need to drill a well deep enough that it can feed you regardless. And once you have enough to feed you, take care of your house, keep a roof over your head, everything else, then you can start to diversify. Then you can go into the second or third or fourth business, because you have the resources, the money, the knowledge, the experience to be able to say, okay, I'm going to launch another business.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to the point where we had seven different businesses with my partner and I, but it was based on having one that was doing really, really well before we expanded into the other ones, because we just had to keep pruning. And we spend money on stupid stuff, but maybe we should do this. Then we go, wait, stop. Let's stop doing it.
So, yeah. That makes a lot of sense, man. And I think this is kind of, Dale, a perfect time to kind of, you know, bring the audience and the listeners up to speed with a conversation you and I had about a week ago where, sure, you know, we were talking about, and I don't want to, you know, take your thunder here, but we were talking about what are some of the common traits or characteristics that people need, successful entrepreneurs need to have in order to have a thriving and successful business. And one of the things you shared with me is, you know, like, I think one of your unique abilities is the ability to delegate and hire. Talk a little bit about that, because I mean, you just talked about how simultaneously you and a partner were running seven businesses. Most people can barely comprehend running one or two businesses. You had seven at a time. You know, talk about the skill of developing the skill of just delegation and hiring the right kinds of people.
Okay. So here's a couple things. Most entrepreneurs want to hire other entrepreneurs. Worst idea ever. All right. They go, oh, you want to be in business too? Dude, you and I should work together on this. Stop doing that.
Yeah. That happens so often.
It does. And it's like an automatic death knell for your business. It's you're just assigning it to an earlier death. Too bad. Here's how I hire people. 95% of the world or more just wants a steady paycheck and a job, just wants to be told what to do and wants to go home after work and not think about stuff. 3 or 4% want to like be in charge of stuff at a higher level, and only 1 or 2% really want to be the owners and be the investors. And I mean, who are willing to put in the commitment, the sacrifice, and everything else that comes with it.
Yeah.
So what I do is I look for the 2 or 3% who are willing to be a leader. But for the most part, I look at a business and I go, I only need one leader, and then the rest of them can be employees. And so instead of going and trying to empower, and although I mentor a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs, I have to make the distinction that I wouldn't hire a lot of these guys. I would be much better off in a position of basically saying, hey, you know, you need a job, get a job. If you're an entrepreneur, get the hell out of here, go do your own thing. Mm-hmm. So what I do with delegation is I really look at people, know that they I know what they want at their core. They want to feel like they're doing something important. They want to feel like they're connected to a business and to coworkers that make them happy, and that it's a good thing for them, and it's good. And it keeps them fed and keeps their families fed and keeps a roof over their head. And so when I look at their things that they're really holding important, I approach him from that perspective and go, here's what I need. I need these tasks done, and I need this responsibility taken over. Can you do it? And then I look to hire those people, and I interview a lot of people. And one of the ways I've gotten good at hiring is it's a numbers game. It's kind of like telling a wholesaler.
Yeah.
You just have to go through a lot of numbers to get it down. It used to be you looked at 100 houses and made offers on 30, and it got all the way down to one. When you're really experienced, you look at maybe 20 houses, make offers on 10 of them, and buy 7 of them, right? So your numbers are totally different when you're experienced. So in the beginning, you just have to talk to a lot of people and interview a lot of people. And it doesn't really cost money to interview people. It does cost time, but not as much money. So here's what I suggest is if you're going to do this, learn how to first find good people. There's dozens of interviewing templates out there. In fact, I use my own specialized one after all these years. But learn how to interview people and how to make a decision. And the next most important thing for delegating is how to let go. Because a lot of entrepreneurs, they just like, no. It can't be done as well as me.
Yep.
No. Sometimes you have to hire two people who can do it only 80% each as well as you. But when they're together, they're 160% as good as you.
Yeah.
So
I was just going to say, I've struggled with that in the past. I've gotten better, in the last few years I've come to the realization that 70 to 80% of me is better than 100% of, because it's a bottleneck, right? There's only one of you and there's 24 hours in a day, and most people have families and things they like to do. And so if the buck stops with you, it's not really a business, right? I mean, it's just more of a job or a high paying job.
Yeah, exactly. So what delegation comes down to going beyond the initial fear of if I don't let go, they don't do as well as me, and realizing that 75, 70, 80% of you is better than none of you, or you spread across too thinly. And also that, you've got to look past that and see that you're buying your freedom. Every time I hire somebody, I buy my own time back, my own freedom back. So somebody says, yeah, but if you have all these people in there, your business isn't as profitable. You don't take as much money home as you need to.
Wrong mindset.
And I go, I'm okay with not as much money if I have all the time to play with it.
Yeah.
But none of the time and too much money is not the best. Not the best mix either.
What I hear often, Dale, I hear when it comes to the subject of hiring, especially from people in my space, wholesalers, I don't know if it's a scarcity mentality or a fear mentality that they can't afford an employee or they can't afford to give away X percent of the deal. And what I've learned over the last few years is you can't afford not to have that person, right? Because like you said, I mean, I think you nailed it. You're buying back your time. But I'm not sure if it's scarcity or fear or just the mentality that it's not only that people don't want to let go and they're control freaks, but I really feel like at least a lot of the people that I've spoken to in the past, it's, my business only makes 100 or 200 or 300 grand in revenue a year. How can I afford a $50,000, $60,000, or $70,000 salaried employee? And it's that kind of mindset that just keeps the business stuck at that level.
Right. And so when you can say, well, okay, we're going to have to eat ramen again for 6 months while I hire somebody, but in 6 months your business may have doubled, then you're going, oh, we don't have to eat ramen anymore. If you do it right, you don't have to eat ramen at all.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. When I look at things, I go, what I can't afford not to do this. And so I that's how I make my investments, is I can't afford not to make an investment. I can't afford not to do this. So I'm really cognizant of my time is the only thing I can't purchase more of, but I can purchase it what I've committed back from somebody else by using somebody else. I can purchase my time back. I'm happy to do that. And besides, if you do take a longer view, like, okay, it's going to take me 5 years, and I build up a company and I have good people and I build a culture and I have set the expectations and I set the goals and I'm very clear on where we're all going, you'll find that the company will kind of like literally start to become its own entity and grow and, mm-hmm. And move to support you in other ways. And you're going to be so surprised at how much freedom you have, how much support you have, and what kind of life you can, you know, and what can you grow it to. I mean, doing $25 million a year online is tough. And we have like 25 employees doing that, right? Okay. And so that's like each employee is basically worth $1 million a year to us. So we look at it from gross revenue, and we look at it like that and say, well, that's worth, you know, that's definitely worth the $60,000 or $70,000 or even $150,000 or
yeah.
So, you know, and so we pay a little higher because of our tree and everything else. But, you know, even just a good VA to help you organize all of that, so you can come into your office organized every day mm-hmm. and go, ah, here's everything. Here's my to-do list. And here's 20 people I need to call. You can sit down and call and bang it out, you know, an hour and have most of the rest of your day off because your virtual assistant or your assistant organized for you. People don't realize that these are one of the things that you have to stop doing to grow your business is you have to stop wasting time on the wrong activities.
That's right.
Coming in and organizing my office and figuring out who I need to call and doing the little teeny things like, oh, I have to log into my bank account and do this and that. Those are all time sucks that don't add value to your life. They don't add any income. They don't add any value, mm-hmm. but they're necessary to get done. And if I can pay somebody $10 an hour to do 8 hours worth of work like that, and I don't have to do any of it, I get to work 1 hour on the most important things that I need to do. And I get 7 hours off. Hell yeah.
It's a no-brainer. And so, Dale, man, what I want to do now, because, again, I know we have a limited amount of time and there's so many directions we can go in here. I want to kind of pivot and talk about something we've never really talked about in the past. But you and I, you were telling me a couple of weeks ago about a 16,000 square foot Class A office building that you bought that you bought out of bankruptcy for, I think it was what, like 21 cents on the dollar?
Yeah, that was a great one.
That sounds ridiculous. So although it's obviously this has nothing to do with wholesaling, it's just, you know, when you develop the type of mindset I think that Dale has, you know, for everybody listening in, and you kind of go about business the way that he's doing it, there's opportunities that present themselves. And Dale, I know you got started with apartment buildings, you know, when you were in your 20s. And so, you know, that's stuff we can touch on. But yeah, man, I'd love to hear, you know, how the hell you bought a Class A office building for, you know, 20 cents on the dollar, basically.
Yeah. So, you know, remember I was telling you build out your network and you have your network constantly pinging you with deals and you get really, really good at saying no to a bunch of deals and yes is to just the right deals.
Yep.
So what happened was is I built out a little bit of a network here in town in Albuquerque, and our business was growing so fast. We were in 3,500 square feet. We needed maybe 5 or 10,000 square feet. And I go, well, we need to expand. And this guy goes, well, I don't know if you're into it. So I pinged my network and somebody says, I don't know if you're into it, but these guys were going to buy this building, but we know they're going to be out here shortly. They're just not into it. So, but it's, if you want, we can make an offer to take over their position. They've already put $50,000 on. The bank wants to get rid of it because it's in bankruptcy and it's a pain in their ass. And I remember we looked at it and it was this beautiful property, Class A, all glass and steel, all fiber optics run to the building throughout the building. Super high end. They spent around $7 million to build the building. They had a $4.5 million loan against it. And it went into bankruptcy when it was part of a master plan community that failed. Okay. Well, the master plan community went through bankruptcy and came out on the other side. And these investors had bought the land, but they didn't buy the building because they go, we're not really landlords of commercial buildings, so we don't do that. And I looked at it and said, I'll take it, because we needed the office space. And so it was a perfect match for us, for an internet company that had fiber optic right into the building. So we became its main primary tenant, and I just it was right around Thanksgiving, and they said, "Well, you have to close in 30 days." And so I made a few phone calls, wrangled up all the money, and bought the whole thing for $850,000, and it appraised for like $4 million 2 months later. So 2 months after we bought it. So it was a great, great product.
And that's
great
insane. Do you have any idea why that kind of property didn't hit the market? Like how you were able to pick it up so cheap?
It had been on the market for 3 years, but the thing was, is it was in bankruptcy and other people, you know, 3 years after everything was crashed in the marketplace and 3 years after 2012, everything was like messy. So it had been out there, but nobody was having any money in Albuquerque and Austin, but nobody knew what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, and to us, it was like, well, it's ideal to us because it's in the right place. It has this enormous, beautiful view. It's just a stellar piece of property. What nobody could figure out what to do with it. But for us, it was a perfect fit. And
what we ended up smoking deal, man.
It was the payments on it were less than our rent was at our 3,500 square foot place. So,
wow.
It turned out to be even better. And so, you know, that was just one deal. Another deal I did was, you know, because somebody had heard that I'd done that deal, they started bringing me other deals. And this bank came to me and said, hey, we have a 90,000 square foot building in downtown Albuquerque. And we have an issue that if we evict the one tenant that's in there, that's in one corner of the building, that it would give us a black eye as far as in the community. So we don't really want to do that. And we'd rather have somebody who's willing to foreclose on the guy or do something different. And we've already written it off. It was a $6 million loan on a 91,000 square foot building. And I bought it for $650,000 and I flipped it the same day.
What?
Yeah. So I didn't even own it for like more than 15 minutes. And I made a great profit on it. But what it was is it was just building your network out. And it's not something that you can do overnight, but you just do it. You meet with bankers, you have lunch with them, you meet with mortgage brokers, you meet with a bunch of people, you meet with attorneys, and you just, you know, sit there and say, hey, if there's anybody with a really big, hairy problem in real estate, come to me, I can solve it. And I usually just figure it out. And then on the other side, I just always line up with investors and say, hey, I get these really cool deals. You should have some money set aside in case I bring a good deal to you. You can do it.
Yeah, you know, and I don't want to bury the lead because I'm going to circle back to this. I want to kind of dig a little bit into the networking because at least those two deals that you just talked about, like that was the common thread. Like that's what I pulled out of it, that you were able to land those deals and you got those opportunities presented to you because you had taken time to plant seeds and build the network. But one of the things that, and remind me to circle back to that, but one of the things you just mentioned about private money, I recall a conversation you and I had over lunch years ago in Vegas. You probably don't even remember this, but one of the things that stuck with me that we were talking about private money and you know, you were telling me your story, how you raised over $90 million. And one of the things you told me is that you're always talking to people about what you do, even though you might not have a deal at the moment, you're always, like I just said, planting those seeds so that when an opportunity comes, you pick up the phone and it's significantly easier for you to attract and get that private money versus waiting for, you know, what most people I think do is they get a deal and then they try to go find the money. I think what you've done so well is that you've created this large network. You plant seeds with people about what it is you do. And then when the opportunities come, then you present it to them and I feel like you've put yourself in a significantly better position to get that money, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So let me give you an example about an 8-year relationship. I met this realtor who was a commercial realtor in the little town I lived in, Corrales, just outside of Albuquerque. And he and I had lunch one day and we were talking and I really liked him. He was a cool guy. And I, you know, don't usually use realtors for anything. So one day we were looking for for an office space because our business was growing and we were in 1,000 square feet and we wanted to go to the 3,500 square feet. And I called him up and I said, listen, I know I can negotiate this deal. And I know that I'm pretty good at it. So, but here's the thing. If you get the landlord will pay the realtor a percentage of the commission if he brings in the tenant and does all the paperwork and everything else. So I said, look, I want to rent that building. Why don't you go and get it all set up for me and do all the paperwork and get everything done and negotiate it for me because I'm busy because we were running a business at the time.
Yep.
And he said, well, you know you could do this. I said, yeah, but it doesn't cost me any money. He goes, pretty much. I said, how much are you going to make on a commission? He goes, oh, I'll make $9,000. So he made $9,000 on that commission. And I said, look, you owe me a favor. So when this building came up, he was representing it, and he was dealing with the hedge fund that was trying to buy it. And so he called me and said, you did me a solid favor once. I'm going to see if I can return the favor. Why don't you take a look at this building and see if you want it?
Wow.
So sometimes doing, you know, some people go, oh, I want to save every dollar I can on every single deal. You know, bites them in the ass. Because I've been generous with deals, and because I've been generous with other people being able to make their commissions and whatnot, they've come out of the woodwork to help me and go even further.
Let me piggyback on that, because my limited experience, at least compared to you, Deo, is I found the same thing. Is when you try to pick the bone off of every deal, no matter what it is, it comes back to, and not that I've done that, but I've always approached business from the mentality of how can I add more value to the relationship than what I'm getting back. And I think if you approach it with that mindset, everything's going to turn around. I mean, it's what goes out is going to come right back to you, whether you're it's a positive or a negative. And so, you know, I'm always trying to approach relationships of how can I give? And yeah, eventually you're going to get something. But I think if people approach their business with, you know, with that mindset, I think they're going to get so much more and get so much further. But what happens is people are just looking for the quick dollar now. And they don't think about other people and their position. And I think you would agree with me, but, you know, let me know if you have other thoughts. I just feel like if people always approached building relationships with trying to add more value than what they get, you know, I can't tell you how many people come to me, which I don't even know them, and they're asking for something right off the bat. I think that's the wrong approach.
I know. It's kind of like asking a girl to marry you the first time you meet her in a bar. Yeah. Hi, you're really pretty. You want to get married and have kids and grow old together?
Right.
You're not going to get the best response. The interesting thing is that when I suggested he take a commission on this, I had no idea when or where or how that ever would come back to me, or if it would at all. But 4 years – or no, let's see. It was a year and a half later that I did. And that was amazing. And, the $9,000, I don't think I could have talked the real estate investor or the realtor down $9,000 off the 3 year rent. But, John got paid $9,000. So that was fine. And as a result, I ended up with that building. Another thing that I did is another realtor came to me and he offered me an assisted living facility that I bought. And I bought it and I went to him and I said, the other realtor who was representing me was not a good match. Can I work with you instead? The guy goes, sure. So he's actually the one who introduced me to the bank that I bought that, $650,000, 91,000 square foot building from. He introduced me to the bank, introduced me to the guy at the bank who told me his problem. He set up the whole deal and he even found me the buyer. So literally, this because I was generous with this realtor, he went through all of this work, found me, found the buyer, found the bank, got everything, negotiated most of the deal. I finally negotiated the last part. But he put everything together, and I was able to walk in, sign a piece of paper, own a building for 15 minutes, and make a good chunk of change, a really good chunk of change, in 15 minutes.
Incredible, man. What a powerful lesson. I mean, if that doesn't speak to, what goes around comes around kind of thing, whether it's positive or negative, like, I don't know what does, but that's sweet, man. That's amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, tell me about it. Let me ask you, because I wanted to kind of circle back to this. It seems like the networking and the building of the relationships kind of seems to be the theme of this particular show. What are you strategic about how you go out and, like, do you target certain types of people that you would say, hey, I really want to build a relationship, or it'd be cool to get to know this person? Or like, I'm trying to figure out if you have a specific process or system, or do you just kind of, it's just embedded in your fabric and the way you go about your life that you're just going to go out and network and meet people. And so it seems like there's two different approaches there, right?
Right. So let me tell you the one I do. There is sometimes the occasional, this guy is the key person in this industry and I need to get to know him, and I'll go talk to him and find him and chat with him. I don't do that very often. What I do is I just am open to people, and whoever I meet, doesn't matter. I go, well, what about you? What do you do? How are you? You know, and I just asked, and you'll be surprised if somebody says, oh, I'm a crystal morphologist, and I study the morphology of crystallization in substrata of geology around oil reserves. And I go, well, that's kind of weird, but I file away in my head. And so when a friend of mine called me up and says, hey, we're looking at an oil play overseas in the Russian area. Do you know anybody who's a crystal morphologist who would happen to know that area? And I go, oddly enough, I do. And I just made the connection. And what it is, I'm just really good at listening to what people are and what they do and what they're trying to do and what they're frustrated with. And I just listen. And I file it away. And people come to me all the time with, hey, do you know anybody who X? And more often than not nowadays, I have somebody who does some really strange, weird, esoteric thing. And, you know, I mean, I literally decided to go down to the Permian Basin in the southern New Mexico for this oil field play. And I said, well, I should probably go down there and find somebody who's been down there a long time, knows what they're doing, and could probably, work for me, being the right guy. And I went down there and I met some people. None of them were the right guy. And I came back to Albuquerque and this guy calls me up and says, hey, there's this guy who works down there driving trucks. And he wants to know if there's anybody, any investors, you know, with some money that might invest down there. And I went, introduce me. So now we're setting up a business and we're down there getting trucks lined up and doing oil field services. And that was amazingly fast.
That's amazing, man. And the thing is, Dale, so like, I know you, so like, I know this is like 100% legit. And it makes total sense to me because I know you. I would imagine some people listening in, they're like, wait, that kind of shit doesn't happen. Like, how do you just like get like, you know what I mean? I would imagine for somebody that's heard you, that's listening to you for the first time and they hear these crazy deals and all, it's like, they can't even fathom it. Like, how does that even happen?
It's more about where I am and who I am internally than anything I'm doing externally. In other words, who I am creates the behaviors externally that create all this stuff. But internally, it has to start there. So I really believe that I can do anything. I'm only limited by what I decide not to do. I totally believe that I can learn really quickly almost any industry, because at a fundamental level, businesses are only made up of four significant parts. And once you do that, you're just kind of like, they're just like Legos. You just stack them up a little bit differently, but it doesn't matter what the business is. And because I've looked at hundreds of businesses as an angel investor, because I've started so many businesses, I know all the blocks, I know all the pieces, I know all the components that need and how they fit together, and when there's not a good fit and when there is a great fit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just understand all that stuff. So now what happens with this, at this, I mean, you got to realize this is 25, 30 years on. At this point in my life, there's just so much synchronicity and flow in my life, because I've believed that and endeavored to make that happen all my life. It just happens naturally. It's like water will flow downhill. So yeah. Deals come to me.
Yeah, that this is fascinating to me. I mean, that's why I say you've always been someone that's just, such a diverse background and just such a unique perspective you have on things. I always love connecting with you. But a couple quick questions here, man, before I let you go. And I want to definitely find out from you where people can connect with you. But let's kind of put a pin in that for a second. Any books, courses, seminars, people, like what has had a really big influence or impact on your life that other people can kind of tap into?
Okay, so when I took the company public, there was a really small book I read. It was called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And the primary premise of that was find who you are and be true to yourself, and then push as hard as you can to be the best you possible. Okay. Mm. That's the premise of the book.
Okay.
Really small. It's an older book. I read it in like an hour and a half. It's a really cool book. That was my public company book. When I started buying real estate, of course, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I kind of went, oh, that's kind of a cool idea. And then I went out and started buying a lot of real estate. When I started doing online businesses, I read The 4-Hour Workweek.
Yep.
And I said, oh, well, I'm going to go out and create. So I literally read a book and I go do it, right? That's how it is for me. So I read this 4-Hour Workweek and I went out and created a website called pigtones.com. And what that was is that was my first website ever. And within about 6 months, it was making $250,000 a year.
Sweet.
And all on autopilot. all on autopilot. I didn't know that it was supposed to be hard. I didn't know it was supposed to be a grind. I didn't know anything. I just set it all up and it was running. And it was selling politically incorrect GPS voices for TomTom and Garmin. And it was hilarious. It was a blast. And
that is so cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, then I read Millionaire Fastlane, MJ DeMarco, and that helped me set up a business differently. So I thought in terms of scale. So we went out and did the supplement. So I went out and started a supplement company and grew it from, you know, our first year in business, we did $4.5 million. Our next year, we did like 12. And we did 20 and 25. We sold essentially $85 million worth of products in 5 years because I read that one book. So that's another one I can recommend. That's oddly enough, I just read a book and go do it because yeah. I just think, well, what's the next step? What's the next most important step? And what's the next step after that? What's the next? And I know it's going to take me time. And I just trust the grind. I trust the process. I just trust that if I keep doing one thing consistently, I will either stop sucking and stop doing the bad things and that I will start getting better and better over time. I just trust that.
Yeah. So let me kind of maybe put a bow on this particular episode, or let me maybe recap some of the takeaways. I didn't write these down, but just off the top of my head, Dale, and let me know if I'm missing any here. It's the belief in yourself, number one, that you can do anything, right? Yep. And there was another quote that you said after that I don't want to butcher it, but basically it's just the belief in yourself that, you know, you're only, I think you said something to the effect of you're only limited by what you
decide not to do.
Decide not to do. Exactly. So that's one takeaway. The other takeaway is the power of just planting seeds and investing in your network and in relationships. Those are the two. I think there was other things that we covered here, but those are the two that really jump out at me here. Any others that you would say, look, if you got one thing from this particular podcast show, one episode, this is what it would be. Now go do it. I mean, you just talked about how, you know, I think you're a very curious person. You're always hungry. You're always learning. You're always seeking. And that'd probably be the third takeaway that I'd say.
Yeah, I know a lot, but I know how much I don't know. And so I'm totally curious all the time about how things work. And I mean, when I wanted to learn about assisted living, I went to an assisted living house, knocked on the door, said, hey, can I come in and talk to you about this? And they showed me around. They told me how it works. They told me how much they charge. They told me how they operate. I mean, people are so friendly with information if you come and ask pretty openly. And, you know, just be honest, be direct. And they were like, here's everything. And I was like, wow. And just to touch on that briefly, we bought an assisted living house. It was literally a house and it was remodeled already, but you know, it had 10 people in it and each person was paying $4,000 a month for those houses.
$4,000 a month on a single family. Yeah.
Yeah, a single family making 40. Now, after you pay for food and 24-hour care and everybody else, you know, it still nets around a 40% net margin. You know, that's like 18.
Not bad at all, man.
Yeah, no, it amazed me. You could buy a $350,000 house and make $15,000 a month. I thought that was amazing. So, you know, and I was just curious about it. And it was never something on my radar until somebody told me about it. And then I go, I want to know more. And I just got curious and ran into it. So curiosity is an absolutely key element of what and how I operate.
So look, let me, and I meant to kind of wrap it up, but I'd be remiss if I don't ask you this last follow-up question. So let's take that as a perfect example, because I hear about your experience in going out, finding an ALF, you know, making $20,000 to $25,000 a month. And I'm instantly very curious about how that business works, the ALF business. For somebody listening that is trying to get traction in their business, they're trying to find more deals, they're trying to make more money, and they're focused on that, and then they hear something like that, like an ALF. What's the balance, Dale, between being curious, learning about that, and going and doing it versus, no, now's not the time, I need to kind of like, you know, buckle down and focus on this one thing that I'm doing now, or, you know, I need to keep my eyes on this business and make it a mature business, make it grow before I can get involved in other things. Like, what's that balance in your head?
Okay. That's a really good question. And so here's how I do it. I can learn about something and then 2 years later have the time and space to enact it. I'm patient. I'm not in a hurry. I mean, people get in such a hurry. Oh, I want to make all this money fast. I go, why? You're going to die anyway. So what's your hurry? I mean, why are you trying to speed up your life so much that you die early? Come on, don't. So here's what happens. I learn about stuff to a certain point, and then I go, okay, I know enough that it's probably something I should go into, just not today. And then I go back to doing whatever I'm doing. Whenever I'm ready to leave or to like go into a new project, my older project has to be at a certain level of where I've delegated stuff off, where it's still throwing off money, where it is taking less of my time, and I can hire a couple people and buy my time back. If I can buy my time back, I have time for this other stuff.
There you go.
Right? If I can't buy my time back, stop messing around with anything else. Just focus on getting your business up to the point where it generates, first of all, enough money to feed you. Second of all, enough money to feed a couple other people so that they can you can delegate to, and practice hiring the right ones until you've got a smooth running operation. You may have to hire three or four people and fire three or four people before you find the right ones. And then when you can buy your time back, now you have time to delegate to another task, like a secondary business or a tertiary business. Well, then you can go off and do that. Not until. That's how I do it. Is the business like this, like the oil field business. I looked at it and I go, am I at a point where I could launch another business? Hell no. Because everything I'm doing is focusing on building out the infrastructure and hiring the right people. It's going to have all of my attention for the next 6 to 8 months before I can even hire someone to recapture some of my time. But in 8 months, I should be doing well. And in 10 months, I should have my team. And in 12 months, I should have the infrastructure, team, and processes and systems in place that I can walk away from it and it continue to run.
I got
it. Makes that's sense. What I'm doing, right? So don't be in such a hurry. Be patient.
Love it, man. So, hey, where can people connect with you? So two-part question. Where can people connect to you, reach out to you? Maybe, you know, if, you know, I encourage you guys, you know, Dale's really giving, just very generous, very giving of his time. Although, you know, obviously that's the one thing you can't get back. So be respectful of it. But if Dale, if people want to connect with you, if they want to, you know, get on your mailing list or just find out about different projects you have going on, or maybe just having a quick conversation, where can they reach out to you and get connected?
So I have a booking site that I use, and you can also reach me on Facebook. On Facebook, it's Who Is Zen Dolphin. And on the booking site, it's bookme.name/Dale Hensel.
Okay.
And you'll put a link in there and you can get to me. But my Facebook is one. This is another one. You know, feel free to reach out to me and I'll be happy to chat. I have a really simple structure. I usually let somebody talk to me for an hour, ask me a bunch of questions, but then my wife said, please find a way to filter out people who waste your time.
Yeah.
So I developed a really simple model. If you want to have me or be able to talk to me whenever, donate $800 to my daughter's college fund and through a PayPal link I'll provide. And you can talk to me whenever, as long as you are respectful of my time and you schedule it and you keep making progress. If you don't make progress for 6 months and you're still asking me the same stupid questions after 6 months, I'm going to very politely invite you to never call me again. But a lot, you know, the first hour is free. Just call and chat with me. After that, if you find that I am valuable for what your specific strategy is, then a one-time $800 donation is all I ask. You know, I figured that's what I make per hour, and my daughter can, go to college on that. So
very cool, man. I love it, Dale. Well, hey, man, I really appreciate the time, brother. If there's anything I can do or anything the audience can do, by all means, let me know. I'll get the word out. And so, I just appreciate, you know, everything that you've accomplished and just your unique perspective. And again, just taking the time to hop on here for what's almost an hour now and just being so giving with your experience and the information. So really appreciate it, brother.
Happy to help, Alex. Always good chatting with you. You're just an awesome dude.
Thank you, Dale. We'll talk soon, man. And everybody, I hope you got at least one thing, if not a handful of things. And, you know, one of the things that jumped out at me now is, you know, Dale talked about how he'll pick up a book, he'll read it, and he'll just go do it. And don't overthink it, you know. So you just heard this podcast. You invested almost an hour of your time to listen to this. Pick one thing and go do it. And, you know, you're going to see results if you're just consistent, right? So that'd probably be the fourth or the fifth takeaway, is just how he talked about consistency in your action. So go out there, plant seeds, you know, give more than you take, and good things are going to happen for you, your business, and your life in general. So I'll catch you guys on the next show. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.